That's the Weavers. And if you're interested in freedom of speech, they lost theirs and to McCarthyism. But nobody forgot about the Weavers because they were so powerful and so much appreciated by the people. The many great songs. Before we speak to Tony Lee, I want to just mention there was a demonstration on Saturday, really around the world, we should say demonstration, some of them in the millions. There was a very large demonstration in Toronto. I know there was one in Montreal without looking, as they say. And it is heartening that that the population of Toronto, and Montreal, Canada, Canadian cities and towns, people know the truth. They can see what is happening, and they want an end to it, and they want the rights of the Palestinian people. It's not only that they want to see an end to bullets and bombs, but they also want to see people being able to live, work, and prosper, which is often forgotten about when people talk about ceasefires, and et cetera. I'm glad we raised the whole issue of the Palestinian state with Professor Link. Now, there was another demonstration in Toronto on Saturday, and it was organized by the Union Unifor, and it had to do with the situation of the Stellantis plant, and our guest, Tony Lea, a Unifor retiree and author of a great book on the Oshawa General Strike of, the Oshawa GM Strike of 37, and he was there. So we're very glad to welcome you. Tony Lea, are you there?
I am, Phil. Hi.
It's very good to talk to you because there was publicity around this effort, and I want to get into the details with you. I can't resist a kind of comment. It looked like a Unifor demonstration because when I looked to see what the union was doing, it was a very important issue, the Stellantis plant, which is not currently active, and the union is very concerned, and I wanted to know how the event went, and so all I did was enter I asked the computer to tell me, and it popped up five or six stories, and each one featured a photograph of Doug Ford in his Unifor T-shirt, and I was struck by that. But you were there, so tell us, what is it about? What was this? Why did they call it? What did they say the crisis is, and how are we going to address it?
I was there. There were 500 or 1,000 people at the rally, and the concern is that the Brampton Assembly Plant, which is a Stellantis plant, has been closed since January of 2024, so going on 2 years now. And originally, there was an agreement from the last contract between Unifor and Stellantis that the plant would be retooled to build a model called the Jeep Compass. And they were supposed to do gas, hybrid, and electric models of that vehicle. And in February of this year, Stellantis announced that they were pausing that conversion, which means extending the layoff, while they assessed powertrain options, which means they were thinking about whether or not they're going to proceed with the electric portion of the vehicle, I would assume, or what, how they're going to balance electric and gas models. But in the meantime, they've done nothing. And then they announced in May again that they were extending the pause, and it's now October, and they still haven't started work. Which means that
are they projecting anything at all? I mean, does it? Sometimes there's people, the state or media will sort of nudge an operation like Stellantis and say, "So, what's up with your pause here?"
They're saying the same thing today that they said in May and that they said in February, which is that they're waiting to see, I guess, what they're going to do. No dates, Originally, the first shift was supposed to be back at work now, today, probably, fourth quarter of this year. So there's 3,000 workers that are continuing to be on layoff, plus all of the associated workers that supply parts for the plant and so on, so thousands of other workers. So that's the concern, and that's what people were rallying to express their concern about and to put pressure on Stellantis to reopen the plant and bring people back to work. And I was dismayed as a longtime union activist to see that the featured speaker at this rally was Premier Doug Ford. And as you mentioned, you know, wearing a Unifor T-shirt. They must have found a triple XL one.
He's the leader. He's the leader. By the way, you're from General Motors, Oshawa. He helped you guys. What did he say? The boat has left the dock?
The ship has left the dock. When GM
that's a leader.
Announced their closure, that was his reaction. Like, what are we can't do anything. I can't do anything.
Mm-hmm. So he can appear, though, and give a speech, and he was all husky and noisy, which is all helpful.
Yes, and that, you know, previous disgraceful episode is not mentioned anymore, and he's treated like a hero, although it's not clear that he can or will do anything to help those workers other than saying, you know,
well,
bring it back to work.
He's a free enterprise man. He's a businessman himself. He's met payrolls. He's the real deal. Aren't we talking, I mean, Stellantis will say, listen, the market doesn't determine. I mean, it isn't ripe for this Jeep, so we can't build something we're not going to sell. And then for a guy like Ford, that's a winning argument, right?
Yes, absolutely. That's his outlook to a T. You know, what is profitable, what the business is.
It's good for Stellantis, it's good for Canada.
To rephrase the old saying, yes. And, you know, so he was big on rhetoric and short on details about, you know, what would happen if Stellantis didn't bring people back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Other than he's made statements that, if they don't live up to their commitment to retool the plant, they won't get the $132 million that his government promised them. He says they haven't got it yet, and they won't get it until the plant starts up again. You know, I don't think that's sufficient to change their minds. And it's basically a pittance for them.
It's interesting how the media handles this. They feature his speaking there, of course, because, in fact, he is a story. If you put him on the podium and you put a union shirt on him, that's a story. But they don't take the microphone from him and walk over to Stellantis and say, okay, he says he's not going to give you the money, so what do you think?
No, they don't. And you're right. You know, what passes for journalism these days is pretty shallow. It's more stenography than journalism. And they don't even take that step of...
Oh, you've opened the magic door. A Unifor is proud of its journalists, and last week we spoke to you about getting the facts and how they are very proud of the journalists in Unifor because they work for papers, and I call them papers. They work for media who... are fact checkers, so you have to rely on them.
Yes, what they call it, legitimate news outlets.
Legitimate.
That's in their statement, and and you and I were talking about this, and you pointed out that it's important that they introduced this argument in support of credible news sources by quoting a woman named. Maria Ressa.
Mm-hmm.
And Maria Ressa, a couple of years ago, was named head of the National Endowment of Democracy.
Pardon my chuckle. Go on, please.
They call it the World Movement for Democracy.
Mm-hmm. This is entirely financed by the United States Congress.
Yes, well, it's part of the NED, government. The National Endowment for Democracy, all, you know, completely funded and directed by U.S. Congress and U.S. State Department, and does, you know, as numerous people have pointed out over the years, allows bad government to carry out what the CIA used to do covertly, yes. openly.
Yeah, by the way, what you're quoting there is almost a direct quote from a former CIA chief.
Yes.
He says, yes. They're doing openly what the CIA used to do covertly.
Yes.
And she's quoted at the top as the inspiring quote from a statement from UNIFOR.
UNIFOR about why we have to support fact-checked news and credible sources like the Globe and Mail and the National Post and the Toronto Sun.
Well, they do check facts to get rid of them. I mean, you know, they said, no, we don't want that one.
Yeah.
I just asked about the Palestinians and whose waters the flotilla was in. Those are Palestinian waters. Well, there's a fact we don't need. That'll be tossed out.
Yes. You know, and meanwhile, you know, we're supposed to be promoting, you know, journalism and finding the facts and freedom of speech. And every day when I wake up, I read about another professor or lawyer or student or
CUPE employee
been fired for expressing support for Palestinians.
On by the way, on their private sites, that is, you know, in other words, exercising their right to an opinion.
And every day you can look at pictures of octogenarians in London being arrested for holding signs saying, "I support Palestine action and stop the genocide."
Yes.
And they just round them up by the hundreds, haul them off to jail.
Yes.
It really is shameful and
terrible situation. And so back on that point, the media is not actually, has never done anything resembling an adequate job of reporting laborers, unions, and actually movements, the unemployed and others, without first going to whoever has the most capital to ask their opinion, and they always dismiss such, you know, the unions as unrealistic and the poor as the lazy, et cetera, and that goes into all these fancy legitimate journals. We're speaking to Tony Leo. He is a UNIFOR activist and author of an important book. By the way, you can follow Tony's writing and others at solonet.ca, solonet.ca. I assume you can all spell Solonet. This issue, is an ancient question. It comes up in every culture and every crisis. What's to be done? At General Motors, when the ship left the dock, et cetera, your union began to, and particularly the local, began to say things about what might be done with the plant. I am not hearing that at the moment apropos of Stellantis. Could you talk about what kind of ideas developed? It could be, and have already been raised, but could be raised now with Stellantis.
Sure. The first time that we thought that GM was going to close the Oshawa plant was in 2016. And, you know, there was a strong movement in the local, in the community that got a reprieve. And they started building pickup trucks in the plant for a couple of years, and then they announced again that they were going to stop that in 2019. And there was very different approaches taken by the national union at the time. Jerry Dias was the national president, where they were advocating a campaign based on telling Canadians not to buy vehicles assembled in Mexico. And that was their approach to getting GM to keep the Oshawa plant open. And some of us opposed that and said that it went against the principle of international solidarity, that we believed in and that we felt would benefit workers more. And some people advocated that if GM was going to leave the plant, it should be nationalized. It should be taken over. The workers should run it, or it should be a public enterprise producing electric vehicles for that consumers could afford in Canada, or that could be used for government fleets, the Canada Post and so on, and that that would be beneficial for the community, for the country, and of course for the workers. And Green Jobs Oshawa was the organization that made that argument and built public support for it.
They were talking nationalization of the plant.
Yes, based on nationalizing the plant. And I think that the principle still holds, that if a corporation is going to walk away from a plant, which has been long established and provides thousands of jobs, they're going to walk away from that, it feel no commitment to the workers of the community, then our government...
And Canadian money, yes.
Well, in every case, they've gotten hundreds of millions of dollars from different levels of government. If they want to walk away from that, government should say, okay, goodbye, we'll take it over. And let's see what we can do with that, and let's consult with the workers that work there and come up with a plan that benefits our communities and benefits those workers. I think that should still be the approach, because if we don't have that approach, then who is making the decisions? Who's in charge? As long as General Motors or Stellantis, in the case of Brampton, or Ford Motor Company, not the other Ford, if they own it, they make the decisions. And when they make the decisions, it's not based on what's good for Canada. It's not based on what's good for the workers. It's actually based on what they feel will most enhance their profits and also keep them in good stead with the government of the United States. Mm-hmm. So that's what really should be questioned, I think, is why do we want a country in which they call the shots, where they're in charge?
Yeah, maybe we could borrow from, they had a leader called Abraham Lincoln. He said, of the people, by the people, for the people. Maybe we should adopt that and tell the Americans, we got this from one of your presidents. And we also got your plant, by the way. of the people, by the people, for the people.
And, you know, I don't know everything that's going on behind the scenes with Doug Ford or the leadership of Unifor, but I think it would sharpen the attention of the Stellantis executives if they were told, you better reopen that plant or you're going to lose it. It will be nationalized.
Yeah, certainly. Well, why not? By the way, I mean, you know, the rhetoric, as you know, people, they say, watch out what you say. You go out the door and meet yourself coming in. The president of Unifor, Lana Payne, said, that's our plant, our plant. There's a consequence, isn't there? I mean, you say, are we just blowing smoke? Are we, what do you mean it's our plant? Because as I understand it, there's actually some property matter involved, which is managed by a foreign company, by the way. Stellantis is French in what?
It's a merger of Fiat and Peugeot, the Italian and French private corporations that also happen to own, you know, what's left of Chrysler in North America. Their headquarters is in the Netherlands, by the way. Yeah, and they're making the decisions on whether that or not that plant will be opened, or, you know, how it will be run. It's not a Canadian industry if it's entirely owned by corporations that are headquartered somewhere else.
Yeah, Canada doesn't make a car.
No, there's no Canadian.
That's always been quashed. Any thought of that has always been quashed.
Yes. I do want to point out that I'm a member of the retired workers chapter of my local, and we submitted a resolution to the Retired Workers Council of Unifor, a national body that was held at the beginning of September. And our resolution called for exactly that. It called for a united response to the tariff threat, taking action to protect jobs by stopping removal of machinery and equipment, advocating a fundamental shift in Canada's economy and politics to reduce our dependence on the United States, including using public ownership and crown corporations to build affordable housing, expand public transit, including high-speed rail, providing renewable energy, expanding healthcare and education, and increasing manufacturing of items Canadians need, and calling on all levels of government to support workers' facilities that are being closed by corporations as a result of the tariff crisis by putting them under public ownership and cooperating with those workers to repurpose their plants to produce for public needs.
Mm-hmm.
And that resolution was presented and discussed at the Unifor Retired Workers Council meeting, and it was passed, adopted.
That's a very, very important point. And the magic words, public ownership, of how else are we going to protect Canada unless the public is involved and understands that the stakes involve them and not just watching the flags of foreign companies move around on the board without anybody having any say over them.
That's right. And, you know, that question of ownership is key. It's key when we talk about media. You know, when we were talking about media just a few minutes ago, we have to look at who owns those media. The so-called credible sources are all owned by billionaires.
Yeah.
And that affects the, you know, the kind of news that we get. And the same is true with who owns these corporations that Canadians work for. And if Unifor is really going to act on behalf of its members, and I hope they are, I hope they do put up an increasingly militant fight against the closure of plants like the Brampton plant. But they can't do that if they believe they're on the same team as the owners of the corporation.
They're partners.
They're partners. This idea of partnership is a dead end. And yeah. When Lana Payne says at the rally, you know, that Stellantis is violating its contract and it's our plant and we're going to, you know, fight to keep it, you know, I want to read. I hate to be a downer, but I have in my hand the contract summary that Unifor gave its members at Stellantis in 2023 when they signed the contract about which included commitments to invest in Windsor and Brampton. And it talked about, $1.32 billion being invested in Brampton, which, by the way, is not a very big amount these days for an auto plant. But at the top of the page, and this is what was distributed to the members before they voted on it, it says this: investments were secured and reconfirmed during negotiations. The following commitments are subject to market demand, consumer preferences, company business plan requirements, and economic conditions.
That's a few.
You know, other than those small things.
That's like taking the air out of the balloon.
We commit, you know, to protecting your jobs, except, you know, if it conflicts with what we decide our business priorities
are. The magic word market.
And the market, yeah.
And so the Stellantis chiefs and the others can always shrug and say, here, look at our bottom line here. Look at this. And by the way, let's talk about, in the minutes remaining, there's been a shift, and we're seeing inevitably have to say the Trump phenomenon. He doesn't like electric vehicles. He doesn't care about clean air. As a matter of fact, if he was here with us, he'd laugh and agree with us. He doesn't give a damn, frankly. He wants to use coal, and he says beautiful coal. He puts the word beautiful in front of coal. And then there's oil and gas, et cetera, and he wants to see if we can burn it all up. And by his great spiritual predecessor, Reagan, was the same way. When Reagan came in, he said, step on the gas. Drill, drill, drill. All of the rhetoric, and by the way, now that we're looking to Ford and we're looking to Carney and we look at the liberals, et cetera, they all used to sing little songs about, yes, we want to protect the environment and we want electrical vehicles. Well, what happened?
Ford, of course, as soon as he was elected, eliminated investments in renewable resources, canceled plans where hundreds of millions of dollars had already been invested, and eliminated incentives for electric vehicles. And Carney's government has just been doing the same thing. They just, they had...
No elbows there. Neither one of them's got elbows.
No, knee pads, I think.
Yeah, the, knee pads, yes. Knee the, pads are in, elbows are out.
The Carney government just announced that the electric vehicle mandate, which was supposed to require that 20% of vehicle sales in 2026 would be electric, they've canceled that, or at least postponed it, and it's under review. Because of lobbying by the manufacturers. Mm-hmm. So these foreign companies that manufacture vehicles in Canada leaned on Carney's government, and he folded. It's also noteworthy that the Federal Conservative Party was taking up that demand. So that has happened. So that's a delay in any type of development of electric vehicle technology in Canada. And people have pointed out that that's in the interests of those corporations, but it's not in the interests of Canadians overall, particularly Canadians that want to have some recognition of the climate crisis and also affordable vehicles or affordable transportation.
You just said the magic words. The great threat from the electric vehicles is that there are countries in the world, of course China is the most famous, who went heavily and seriously into development, and they are a high-quality automobile and far less cost.
Yes.
And the only answer is, well, that's communist China. Which, by the way, I don't know if they're advertising for them or if they're... But this is a rather ignorant policy, isn't it?
I've noticed lots of people these days who are looking at developments in China and saying, well, if that's communism bad, sign me up. Some of it looks pretty good. And unfortunately, Unifor supported Carney's pause on the electric vehicle.
We're going to have to get him a Unifor shirt. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, they're getting good at that. They put a nice jacket on Paul Martin.
I forgot about that, yeah.
And that, that created a stir. This one, there hasn't even been a comment on it, which is kind of sad that we've got to that point. But Unifor supported that it was the right step, and at the same time called for maintaining 100% tariff on Chinese electric vehicles.
100%, but we don't like tariffs when Trump slaps us with 35 or 50. Yeah,
and justify that in part by talking about they call it slave labor conditions. So repeating the slanders against China as justification for really lining up with U.S. Foreign policy.
Yes,
I think it's a terrible contradiction that we need to get out of. We have to stop identifying with this corporate outlook or thinking that somehow that there are partners. They don't care about us.
Never in history have they ever. It's a long, tiresome story of the partner saying goodbye, partner. By the way, we're running out of time, so I have to tell everybody, go to solonet.ca. Get the book by Tony Leo called The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike. That's Baraka Books. It's a wonderful book. But go to Solonet because there you will find the answer to questions such as, what is to be done? Thank you, Tony, very, very much.
Thanks, Phil.
This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We thank Michael Link, brilliant man, talking about Palestine, and, of course, Tony Leah. And we always thank Pedro, because Pedro does wonderful work, plays that good music stuff and all that. And speaking of good music, Steve Fruitman, 45, 78. Gee, I'm getting old and forgot. This Taylor Report. See you next week.